Today on the Main Quest podcast, it's Bubble Bobble. Welcome back to another episode of the Main Quest podcast. This is, of course, the number one retro gaming podcast that re-records its entire backlog after 7 years. As always, I am your host, Keith, and if this is your first episode, welcome to the jungle, baby! You're gonna die! To find out if these retro games I'm playing hold up or not. It gets worse every time I do it. It's like, that's like the seventh time I've done that. Does a Guns N' Roses reference play well to this audience? Appetite of Destruction did come out like a year after Bubble Bobble, so I guess, fuck, spoilers. We're talking about Bubble Bobble today. I honestly haven't been doing a whole lot. I wish I could tell you how much I love or hate Pokemon Snap, or wish I could tell you just what the fuck Returnal is, but I can't, because even though it's May right now when we're listening to this, I'm actually recording this in early April. It's the 10th right now. I went to karaoke last night, which originally I wasn't very keen on going. I didn't even know we were going to be doing karaoke. All I knew is that we're going to go to this bar that has I'll just say it's a bad reputation. I know some of my friends listen to this, and I'd hate to say, man, but I told you so. I just told you so. I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff, though. What I do want to say, though, is that I have been fully vaccinated for about a month now. And coming out of the other side of this whole thing just kind of feels weird, because there's two main cities in Wisconsin, Madison and Milwaukee, that are fully aware that COVID is a problem, that there's a pandemic. And I'm sorry, I'm still talking about the pandemic and stuff like that. I'm just going to get through this real quick, just because it just feels weird being vaccinated, knowing that most of Wisconsin is not getting vaccinated because they don't feel like they need to. But outside of those two larger cities in my state, everywhere else just, they don't believe it ever happened. It's not a thing. And so I've been living in this weird, like, dichotomy? Is that the word I want to use? It's kind of like, it's the real world, and then 20 minutes west of Milwaukee where I work, it's like this shadow realm where conspiracies run wild and gun-toting red-blooded Americans shoot wildly into the air saying that they've destroyed COVID. It is the maskless territories of Wisconsin. And of course, you know, I carry my mask with me wherever I go, have been for a year, wear my mask all the time. You know, none of the establishments outside of Milwaukee give a fuck if you wear a mask or not. And I'm fully aware that once you are vaccinated, you still have to wear your mask, which I still do. I still go to the gym. I mean, I live in Milwaukee, so everywhere I go, you still have to wear a mask. No problem. I mean, am I eager to get rid of it? 100%. I'm ready to burn these fucking masks that I have saved up over the past year or so. But when I'm outside of Milwaukee, when I'm in the burbs, man, I am just all willy-nilly, like, fuck it. Like, if you don't give a shit about getting sick, no problem with me, man. It's not on me. At this point, it's not on me anymore. You have the option to protect yourself, and you refuse to. Wisconsin actually has a really big problem because nobody's getting vaccinated. And so now we have extra vaccines laying around. We don't know what to do with them. I'm like, that's weird. You don't know what to do with them. Maybe we could ship them out to different countries so that they can start getting vaccinated. I don't know. Other states? Seems like a simple solution to me is to give it to the people that need it. And I was just, because I was just talking to a friend last night about how I feel like an undercover conspiracy theorist, an undercover Trump supporter or whatever, when I walk into a place without a mask on. Because they probably sit there and like look at me and like, hell yeah, brother, America. You know your freedoms and you know how to exercise them, brother. Hell yeah. It's just like, nah, man, like, I don't care if you die. Like, fuck it. I'm all good. And so it's really weird. which was awesome. I'm just like, oh, wow. So this is how all those crazy fuckers felt last year when they're saying they didn't want to wear a mask. I get it now. It's really fucked up, but I don't know, man. It's the Wild West out here. Everybody's talking about Texas and Florida, but Wisconsin is laying in the cut, not giving a shit. Things have been open here since June of 2020. Like, nothing has been closed at all. So we had the short little like March, April, May, but like once June came swinging around, everybody was just like, fuck it. So living weird, living dangerously. Yeah, but the interesting stuff last night was that two fights broke out at the bar. None of my friends were involved in the fights, but and I sang a Slipknot song. So let's talk about Bubble Bobble. I have to say up front, I'm a little disappointed. I got this game confused with Puzzle Bobble, which is a spin-off of this game. And I absolutely love Puzzle Bobble. Puzzle Bobble's the shit. And I was just really excited to play this for the show. And then I found out that it's not that. So I'm hoping, you know, looking at my notes, as I talk through this, my indifference here doesn't come through in my recommendation. But I guess I won't know until I get there. Bubble Bobble is a platformer developed and published by Taito. This is my first Taito game here on the show, and the company has kind of an interesting story. And of course, we have to begin with Soviet Russia. Because if it's two things that come up very frequently on this show, it's Capcom and Soviet Russia. But we're not going to stay in the land of vodka and unibrows for very long. But we will actually come back around to vodka. Founder Michael Kogan was born in Russia and during World War II became a refugee. As the war went on, he lived in China, and while he was there, he founded his first company, Taitung. Co-founder Kogan's father was a carpenter and helped turn the business into a flooring manufacturer, among other minor things such as brushes and wigs. Because, you know, the missus, she needs to treat herself when she goes to buy the kitchen floor. So during the 1940s, the Chinese nationalists would endure a long civil war with the Chinese Soviet Republic, who had taken control over about a third of the territory in China at this time. One of these areas was Shanghai, where Kogan and his father set up shop and were eventually forced to liquidate and move the company to war-torn Japan in 1950. The father-son duo rebranded as Taito Yoko, and by 1953 was folded due to internal theft of products and finances. Around this time, Kogan met lawyer Akio Nakatani, who helped Kogan kickstart and rebrand once again, calling this new endeavor Taito Trading Company. Unlike Kogan's other undertakings, Taito Trading Company, I'm just going to call it TTC from here on out, found financial success selling and distributing vodka, which is a first in Japan. As the country began to slowly rebuild itself after the war and grabbed an economic foothold, Kogan began collecting broken vending machines and jukeboxes, leftovers from the wreckage of World War II. He began to what we would call, I guess, refurbish them and redistribute them, allowing Taito to become one of the official distributors of AMI jukeboxes. Now, what's a jukebox? Well, imagine Spotify or Apple Music was a vending machine, and you wanted to play some WAP, because who doesn't want some WAP from time to time? So you put a nickel in. Now, what's a nickel, you ask? Well, a nickel is a 5-cent piece, typically distributed in America, that is composed of
a little longer than a few minutes later.
So you put the nickel in the Spotify vending machine. You select WAP out of 10 songs available on that Spotify vending machine. And the song plays. And only that song. That's a jukebox. Anyway, by 1972, TTC rebranded once again to what we now know as Taito Corporation. Using the same broken-down machines they acquired to make the jukeboxes, Taito began making their own rudimentary arcade cabinets. It was around this time Taito established an American subsidiary in Chicago, Taito of America, and by 1978 became a worldwide phenomenon with its hit arcade machine, Space Invaders. This, of course, ushered in the golden age of arcade games, something I briefly talked about on a previous episode, Pac-Man. Unfortunately, during a business trip in LA, sadly, Michael Kogan passed away, and the company was passed on to his son, Abraham. During Abraham's time at Taito, the arcade market was fluctuating, and the home console market was just starting to recover after those fuckers at Atari messed it all up. This is when Taito opened up their own design studio, with Fukio Mitsuji taking up several of their projects. Mitsuji was enamored with the success Namco was having in the early 80s with Pac-Man, because, I mean, weren't we all? And that inspired him to want more out of an arcade game and design something that's not only of great quality, but of course could be marketed to women as well. Seems like we literally just heard this kind of same exact story a couple episodes ago. It's weird. And for whatever reason, Mitsuji thought women would be drawn to bubbles? Like, what the hell was going on in Japan where he thought women were like, yeah, I'm really into bubbles. Either way, his initial design was to have the screen covered in bubbles. We're going to be saying bubbles a lot in this episode. And then having the players pop them as kind of like a means of progression. The character design was originally supposed to be a robot, but according to Mitsuji, that wasn't cool enough. So he redesigned it as a dinosaur with pronounced ridges on its back, which would be used to pop the bubbles. Several of the enemy designs were taken from Chack and Pop, which is an older Taito game that is often considered a precursor to Bubble Bobble. Mitsuji intended the game to be played by couples, leading to the creation of multiple endings, which differ based on player performance, as well as, of course, the two-player co-op mode. Bubble Bobble went on to be a huge success for Taito and has gone on to inspire the creation of very similar games of its ilk. It was the second most successful table arcade cabinets right behind Taito's own Arkanoid. The game has also been listed as one of the best video games of all time by, several publications, and went on to spawn over 20 direct sequels. Bubble Bobble was released worldwide in 1986 for the Famicom and NES. It's since been ported to the Commodore 64, ZX Spectrum, Game Boy, Game Gear, Game Boy Color, Sega Master System, Sega Saturn, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, Xbox, Windows, Nintendo 3DS, and the Wii U Virtual Console. So I'm glad I got that little bit of history out of the way, because I honestly don't know if I have a lot to say about the game itself. There's not much of a story. We play as Bub and Bob, two tiny dinosaurs, or dragons. I like to call them dragons. Despite everything that I've read about this game, it just makes more sense to me that they would be dragons. I mean, it makes sense that dragons would belch bubbles and not dinosaurs. I don't know what kind of sense that makes. And when I say it out loud, it still doesn't make any sense. Whatever. It makes sense to me, goddammit. So these two guys are on a quest to find Baron von Blubba and rescue their girlfriends. Take a shot, guys. Take a shot. We're getting laid. It's been a while since we've had to rescue a damsel in distress. I almost forgot we were playing retro video games for a while. Looking at the manual, it states that that this game takes place in a magical forest. It doesn't. Doesn't at all. All the levels just look like the programmer was like, look what I can do with these giant pixels. It's like when you were a kid and you made boobs on your light bright, or if you go and look at all the giant dicks and hentai on Smash Ultimate user created stages, all the stages in Bubble Bobble are exactly the same, except there's some sort of gimmick or like pixel artwork that serves as the stage's platforming. And I don't want you to get this confused with a side-scrolling platformer. Each stage is just one board with no continuity. Every stage is completely different from one another and have no real established setting or clear themes. And because of these irregular design choices in the levels, this makes the platforming and getting around the stages really difficult at times. I would say that out of the 100 levels, at least 80 of them are very poorly designed. Again, I'm not making this comparison to be funny, but to actually just expose just how awful these levels are. They seem like they're made by a 14-year-old who just wants to make cock and ball stages in Smash Ultimate. Now, the designs in this game aren't actually cocks nor balls or big anime titties, but they're usually just like a logo, letters, a bigger design of an already existing enemy, or some other asinine configuration. Sure, these patterns are big, they're bold, and I don't know, but it makes the platforming rules completely useless, and the game is kind of broken. Each board or level has a pit at the bottom of it, which is actually similar to the tunnels or gaps at the left and right sides of the board on Pac-Man. If you fall down the pit, you actually don't die, but instead you float or automatically scroll to the top of the screen. But because of some of these levels' designs, you can't even reach these pits sometimes, and more often than not, you'll get stuck in the geometry because there are no set rules. Some platforms you can jump from underneath and land on, but sometimes those platforms are solid and you'll have to walk around them in order to jump onto them. Sometimes this happens within the same stage. Other times you'll seemingly be able to walk through the walls and get stuck. And more often than not, I found myself clipping through the entire stage. It's real broken. These stages are awful. And there's 100 of them. None of them containing a boss at all until the final stage. But I'll get to that in a minute. So I guess with all the levels out of the way, all this level talk, I should probably talk about the gameplay. I feel like these past two episodes I've just been really messing with the structure of the show lately. But essentially the dragons belch bubbles from their mouths. The bubbles are used to be shot at enemies, which then can be popped and killed by jumping into them. The bubbles can also be used as platforms to reach higher ground. And if you jump on them and hold A, you can also bounce off of them. Another technique you can use is just to run right up in the enemy's face and blast them with a bubble, which is something I did more often than not if I could, because trapping them in a bubble the traditional way just really isn't that responsive. It actually takes you a couple of tries to pop the bubble sometimes. And it's also nice not having to chase the bubble down and trying to pop it as well. Now, there are tons, there's a lot of power-ups in this game. Each one has a completely different effect, which is something you actually didn't see too often in games like these. To name a few, you have candy, and that helps blow bubbles farther and faster. You got shoes that make the dragons walk faster. You have a few offensive items that clear the screen of enemies, and the parasol, which doesn't spawn as often as I would have liked it to. This thing allows you to skip ahead 5 levels. This being an arcade game, it's all about racking up points and extra lives. After killing an enemy, they'll fly around the stage, and when they land, they'll turn into vegetables. Oh god. I just realized what I just said. Yeah, they just lay in that hospital, man. You gotta you got to sit there and you got to think like, man, would they want me to pull the plug?
Walker told me I have AIDS.
No, they'll turn into vegetables and fruits, and you pick those up to collect points. You can combo the enemies by herding them into groups and popping all the bubbles in one jump to spawn better drops. And then there's the extend letter drops. Letters will spawn from time to time, and when you collect enough to spell out the word extend, you will be warped to a special screen, have a seizure, but gain an extra life and skip to the next level. No, seriously, like that screen, flat, there's flash, there are colors, lots of colors. Now, with all the problems I have with the level design, I should say that this game isn't very hard at all. Even with the variety of enemies, it doesn't take long to figure out their patterns and take them out. But when you get to the last level, and you have to fight the one and only boss of the game, the difficulty goes through the fucking roof. Now, the final boss, by the way, is called Grumple Grommet in the game's manual, the very manual that also calls the boss Baron Von Blubba, who is also a separate enemy that shows up on every stage if you're taking too long to clear it. So, yes, I would say that this game has poor localization. But yeah, this boss is fucking hard, man. I don't know. It really doesn't do anything except jump around the stage like a Windows 98 screensaver and shoot 8 cascading fireballs. It's the thing that makes it so difficult is that the sprite is so big, and so touching any enemy in the game will kill you instantly. So if you even come close to this thing, you're dead. Luckily, if you do game over, you don't have to start at stage 1. You can pick up where you left off. And there's even a password system, so you can find your way back to where you were pretty easily if you end up just turning the game off completely. So since the boss is so large, how do we damage it? Well, there's a special power-up that only spawns in this stage that allows our bubble boys to blow bubbles of electricity. These electric bubbles spawn on certain levels as well, as an entire entity all their own. On those stages, I kind of just found them entirely useless because it's kind of really hard to judge, one, where the electricity is going to shoot, and two, the trajectory of the oncoming enemy. The enemies and the electricity move around the boards so quickly, you'll probably end up missing your shots anyway. But during the last boss, I mean, he's so damn big, you'll probably hit him like 3 or 4 times in a row with the electricity. But because of this, he also takes like 80 hits. It's ridiculous. So then you've also got the length of the battle working against you, with that one hit KO in mind, and it's hard. It's just really, really difficult. But if and when you do succeed, one of the remarkable things that this game did back in the day was offer up multiple endings. The ending most people will see is the bad ending, because no matter how you cut it, if you're playing this game by yourself, you will never see the real ending to this game. To get a happy ending, you need to play with a friend. And yeah, I realize what I just said. If you beat the game in co-op, the dragons transform into humans. At least they look like humans. I think they're humans. They actually kind of look like that Colgate toothpaste mascot from the 90s. Just Google it if you don't know what toothpaste is. And then we're given a text crawl stating, quote, "Congratulations, Bobby and Babby, my God. I didn't realize how terrible the localization for this game was until I started looking at my notes. Fuck. Bobby and Babby. Bob and Bub. Which is it? Bobby and Babby. It sounds so stupid. You saved your lovers, Betty and Patty. Ugh. I understand this is a game for 6-year-old girls, but God, this is so lame. Your adventure is not over yet." End quote. So, when we reach the end of the credits, we're given a password, which unlocks Super Bubble Bobble. Now, we've seen this kind of stuff with Pac-Land, Super Mario Brothers, Ghosts and Goblins, probably something else I'm forgetting about. It's just a harder setting for the game that we have just played. And when you beat that, in co-op, of course, you get the true ending, where you not only save your ladies, But the final boss transforms into your parents. It's real dumb. It's for 6-year-olds. Whatever. 6-year-olds are dumb. We get a cool thing this time. Like a cool thing. A cast list. And those, I like those things. I like when a game has a cast list at the end of the game. And I like it even more when the localization is all fucked up because none of the names match what's in the manual. So we've got enemies like Monster, Skell, Stoner, and Drunk. This localization was practically made for the show. I can't even make this up. Oh, and then there's one more text crawl. But do you really give a shit about that? Let's talk about the graphics real quick. The intro or splash screen really is kind of cool. You get all these colorful bubbles filling the screen and the really bright logo comes down. It's kind of impressive that the NES could actually handle all of that stuff without chugging along. The rest of the game is fine. There's nothing really impressive about it at all. It's a pretty faithful imitation of the arcade game. The colors are a little flat on the NES and kind of lack textures that really pop. But there's nothing here that's hard to look at. And Bub and Bob, or Bobby and Babby, look adorable until they transform into toothpaste monsters. The human sprites in this game are fucking awful looking, I'll say that much. The limitations of the NES's graphics don't work well with their choices to design the humans the way that they are designed. Now, if I had to really say something negative about the way that the game looks, is just that every stage is just one solid color. The color changes from stage to stage, but the entire stage is just either completely red, or gray, or blue. But the enemies, I mean, they're colorful enough, so you do get extra splashes of color here and there. I'm trying to think. I feel like I've kind of been all over the place on this episode. Did I forget to mention anything before I talk about the music? I honestly didn't even think I was going to talk about this game for as long as I have been. I probably did miss some stuff, but it probably isn't a detriment to the presentation of the game, so I'm just going to play it safe and move on to the music anyway. The music sucks. Sorry, Tadashi Kimijima. I'm sure you worked really hard on this and had this grand idea in your mind to pull this entire game together with your musical prowess, but you don't. The game has around 8 tracks. 5 of them you won't hear until you beat the game, and 7 are just slight variations of the same fanfare. Fanfare? Yeah, fanfare. Now, I will admit, the first few levels hearing that main theme throughout the game, I was kind of bubble bobbing my head around to the jingle. Yeah, you like what I did there? It did bring back some faint memories of playing this game as a kid. But then after like fucking 30 levels, I wanted to shoot myself in the face. It sounds a little too close to carnival music for my taste, and that just bothers the shit out of me personally. At least in Adventures of Lolo, the music was minimalistic and easily, at least I could easily tune it out since you're solving puzzles that entire game. In Bubble Bobble, you're just blowing enemies and popping them. So yeah, this is the second game in a row, I guess, where I can just easily recommend that you mute your TV and turn some music on if you're going to play through this. Hello, guys. This is past, present, or future Keith stopping in. I thought I was going to end this episode here, but I actually have some listener stories. Now, this is a segment that I haven't done in a very long time because I don't really promote it that often. If you want to submit your personal experiences with the games that I'm playing for the show, you can check out the schedule that I post on Instagram. That's The Main Quest. You can shoot me a DM there. Otherwise, you can email me at mainquestpod@gmail.com. And you can also shoot me a DM on Twitter. I don't really post a schedule there. It's all mostly on Instagram. But hey, shoot me a DM on Twitter. That's at MainQuestPod. If you see, you know, if you see something coming up on the show, if you look at the schedule and you're like, holy shit, he's going to talk about Mega Man 2. I want to tell him my experience with Mega Man 2. Go ahead. And chances are I will probably read it on the show. I've kind of put the listener experience stuff on the back burner for now, but it's always here. You can always submit your personal experiences for upcoming episodes. And this one came in late. I'm recording this at the end of April, and I'm just going to kind of slip this into the already existing episode. This story comes from a longtime listener, a longtime supporter of the show, the Masked Llama. They say, Bubble Bobble is very special to me growing up. My mom absolutely loved that game, so it was one of the few games that I got to play with my mom growing up. She would always die in the first few games on the first few levels, because she believed that the game gave you better items on your third game and so forth. So anytime after your second game, are you always got more rare prizes more often? I don't know what they're saying here. I think what they're trying to say is anytime after you died, you always got more rare prizes more often. We would usually play until level 57 because that level was crazy hard, and then you have to start all over again. We knew the level select code, but only used that sparingly because I've always liked playing from level 1. I honestly could not tell you if it's a good game or not objectively. I don't really care. It's just that video game that holds the closest of family ties. Masked Llama, thank you so much for submitting that. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. I just thought this was a very sweet story, and I thought it was pretty important to include it on the show. It's been a couple of weeks since I actually recorded Bubble Bobble at this point, and I thought it'd be a nice juxtaposition to the stuff that I had to say about that game. Fuck, did I just ruin my recommendation? Ah, shit. Maybe I didn't. Oh, fuck. Ignore what I just said. But I think whether, you know, if you got a memory like this is something that you so important to you and something that's as touching as this story has been, it kind of negates, you know, whether or not the game sucks or not. You know, something I always say is that you can never beat nostalgia. And so I think that's obviously one of those games for you. And when I do talk about a game like Bubble Bobble that I don't have any past experience with, I oftentimes feel very sterile and cold-hearted. But of course, it's a little bit of my own personal experience because I play the game before I talk about it. But also, it's exactly what I've been playing. So, yeah, Masked Llama, thank you so much, dude. Or dude, I call women dude too. Don't know which is which. Anyway, thank you so much for writing in. Back to the show. But as a whole, can I recommend Bubble Bobble for the NES? Oh man, this is actually tough. I think I say that every show. I mean, all right, I have to get this out of the way first and foremost. The level design fucking sucks. And the programming that went into the levels is straight up lazy. There's no rules when it comes to moving around in this game. Some platforms you can jump through, others you can't. If you don't get stuck in the geometry of the level, the enemies will. Oh, and this is actually a perfect time to mention this since I just talked about Lolo, but Lolo had a kill switch in it. If you got stuck on a puzzle or messed something up, you could kill yourself by pressing select and starting the puzzle over. If you get stuck or trapped in Bubble Bobble, because these levels were programmed by otters,
you have to wait until that weird ghost enemy shows up and wait for him to hit you. And that shit takes forever. And if the enemy gets stuck, chances are you'll probably get hit and die trying to trap them in a bubble because you can't shoot your load through a wall. Trust me, I've tried in real life and in this game. Unless it's a glory hole, then technically you're shooting your load through a wall. But there's that. And then on top of that, there's 99 of these fucking levels. So maybe if the game was shorter, let's say 50 levels, or that parasol power-up you get lets you skip 15 levels instead of 5, I think this game is just way too long, and it doesn't increase in difficulty at all. There are times where it's like a little more difficult, but it's very sporadic sometimes. It just feels like a very easy game up until you get to that final stage with the boss. The progression, or lack thereof, just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But the game looks fine, and besides for the platforming, all the other mechanics work well. It is pretty fun and satisfying grouping all the enemies together and busting them open in one jump. Even more satisfying when you mute that fucking soundtrack. So, I'm gonna go with my gut on this one. I'm gonna go with a light not recommend. It's the stages. If you can't tell, it's the stages, man. They're just not interesting at all. They're completely broken, and there's too many. It's kind of like the project management primer. Each of those three things have a relationship to each other. To me, because they made the decision to have 99 stages, they made a ton of really boring stages and had no time to program them correctly. When they could have had less stages, time to program them, and maybe reuse some stuff, but because there aren't as many, you don't get as bored. Or, the last option, the third option, you make interesting stages, each one with a fresh look and feel, less of them, but because they are all so distinct, you still have some programming troubles. Either way, something shines at the expense of something else, and they chose quantity over quality. And I'm also probably still a little salty that I wasn't playing Puzzle Bobble. So, yeah, light not recommend. So, with that, thank you guys so much for listening. Obviously, if you made it this far into the show, you like what you heard. Maybe you didn't, and you're pissed off, and you want to tell me how mad you are. Well, you can do that by following me on Instagram. That's TheMainQuest on Instagram. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's @MainQuestPod. And you can email me, MainQuestPod@gmail.com. Send all those thoughts and comments and suggestions. I suggest you go fuck yourself. I haven't gotten any of those yet. Next week, I'm heading to the arcades. Well, it's another arcade port. I accidentally kind of made this arcade month. Just on accident. Just tons of arcade games. And this is the first month in a very long time where you're going to get an episode every week. Anyway, heading back to the arcades, kind of, sort of, with Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. So until next week, thank you guys so much for listening. Talk to you later. Take care of yourselves. That was so fucking bad. what was I even going to say after that? Oh, fuck, am I going to have to do that again?
Oh my god.